Yeah, have we got an awards bit? Yeah, because of course we do, yes.
There's always an awards bit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very 106th episode of Octothorpe, the podcast for science fiction and science fiction fandom, which is coming to you on the 28th of March 2024, or Maundy Thursday. I'm John Coxon.
I'm Alison Scott.
And I'm Liz Batty.
And hello to everyone who's listening to this on the way to EasterCon. We hope your car/plane/rail replacement bus is pleasant.
I think there might actually be some trains. If you're listening from a train, do let us know.
There might be some trains in the kind of phase where you can still get a train before you get to the rail replacement bus. Let us know, listeners.
If you are delayed by 30 or more minutes, you can claim delay repay and then you can spend it on board games. Board games, better than delays. You know what else is better than delays? Letters of comment.
And we have some letters of comment. So we heard from Bob Morrell on Blue Sky, who very much enjoyed the artwork on episodes 103 and 102, which is the ones about wearing your different Hugo hats and Dave McCarty in a panda suit. So I think they are some of our finest art.
Thank you very much, Bob. And Liz?
Top notch. We heard from Colin Murtagh, who wrote in to comment, "If part of your aim is to explain what's going on in the bubble, I would say you manage that with aplomb. I'm not in the fandom, but between you and File 770, I get clear and concise explanations of what's been going on. So for that, thanks. Hurrah! We're being helpful, guys. Yes! I will say, Colin, if you stop knowing what we're going on about, please let us know, because I do sometimes worry that we'll stop being good at it.
We heard, and this is going to come as a surprise, from Chris Garcia, who said, "There's a photo of a friend of mine on your cover art." Well, obviously there was, because it was Liz, right? "Maybe not a friend, but I got to interview Margaret Hamilton and advocated her for the Computer History Museum Fellowship. So I feel like this is more evidence that Chris Garcia is better at name dropping than most of the rest of us."
And it's always really cool name dropping. It's not like, you know, I ran into such a body on a train station platform and said hello. It's like, oh no, they were in my car along with the lunar lander.
And he also says, "I have listened to Octothorpe on a 20th anniversary Mac, the best Mac ever made. And I know that nobody else cares about this, but that gave me a warm feeling. Thank you. I'm very glad to know that that Octothorpe has been heard on that device."
He does end the letter by saying, "Friendship is the greatest pick of all." So that's good.
Aww.
Alison, I have an art prompt for you. Can you draw us as my little Octothorpe friendship is magic?
Oh, yeah, no, I think that's doable. Chris also says, "The NPC's censure is the closest we've got to any group officially condemning the actions of Chengdu. Pretty much James and Mary Robinette are the only two former chairs who have in writing that I've seen." And that's a good point, I think. And also, I feel like, can we formally condemn the actions of Chengdu, guys?
I mean, I think we were formally condemning the actions of Chengdu before it was cool. We haven't been using the "Chengdu is a shower" artwork enough in the wake of all of this, and maybe we should dig that out, and we should probably get it on t-shirts.
Well, it seems to have calmed down a bit, but I think there will be a point where, for instance, the 2024 Hugo winners have a Hugo and the 2023 winners do not have a physical Hugo that maybe we can drag out again.
I believe they're still in Dave McCarty's lockup, aren't they?
Laurie Anderson of the Hugo Girl podcasts has taken matters into her own hands and made adorable little tiny awards for people. They are extremely cute, and we apparently are going to get some at Glasgow. We're very excited. Yeah.
We're very excited about this.
So, yes. And then we also heard from Mike Glyer of File 770, among other pursuits. "Every episode, I send an email to Mike and Bill Burns to get our episode on File 770 and efanzines.com. And this time I noted more explicitly that there's a transcript of the episode. And Mike emailed back to say, 'A transcript! Blessings upon you all! I've stopped everything and read it.'" Which is high praise. And he wanted to discuss the thing that Alison said, "People reside above you as things go terribly wrong, and then suddenly you'll be working on the world con at a high level." And Mike says, "That's a fact, and it's less fun now than it used to be, because I remember Anita Raj at the 1989 WorldCon family gathering," or whatever it was actually called, speaking about how she'd come to volunteer at NorEastCon 3. The spotlight found the last speaker in the centre aisle, diminutive Anita Raj, who told her story. "This is my first Worldcon. A month ago, I was a simple mundane and wandered into a work session for the convention. She collated, stapled and mailed and wound up with a radio and a beeper in charge of a gang of Teamsters during setup. Don't even try, because you can't get rid of me now."
Yep.
which is brilliant. Thank you very much, Mike. That was good.
So Mike mentions transcripts, and we've been wanting to do transcripts for a while, but we had a problem, which is that we felt that AI transcripts were not good enough, and hand transcribing is more work than you think it is. If you've not tried it and you don't think it's a lot of work, you should try it, and then you can think it's a lot of work. So we've done a few, but we haven't done very many, and so we have a better AI transcript, which we will release with the episode on the day of we drop it. But we're going to then, over the next week, improve it quite a lot. We'll correct all the obvious errors, but it won't be kind of what I think of as a Claire Brierley standard of correction. It will be a kind of us standard of correction, which is definitely not as good as that. More about that later. And you should get that the following week is the plan. So we'll have links on our show notes to where you can get the transcript files. And what we'd like you to do is, you probably have friends who have hearing loss who aren't listening to the podcast because they can't hear it properly. And what we want you to do is let them know that we have transcripts available.
Yes. The other thing we would like you to do is, if you notice a problem with a transcript, let us know. There is a link in the show notes to the GitHub repository with the transcripts, and you can browse them there. So if you notice any errors, let us know, either by email or by lodging an issue on GitHub if you are conversant with the forms.
If you are a proper nerd. So one of the things I have done in the last 2 weeks is start to understand how GitHub works. Not very well.
If you're a proper nerd, you can correct it and just send in a pull request and John will merge it back in. So
yeah, if you do that, you will get a ribbon.
Although in my experience, you can send John a pull request and then he'll send you a load of queries about why your pull request isn't good enough. Just saying.
It is possible that that's more applicable to co-hosts than it is listeners. And we also heard from some people on Facebook. We heard from Farah Mendelson and Alex Holden and Johnny Baddeley and Andrew Rosen. Thank you very much all for writing in. Deb Geisler, who was the chair of NorEastCon 4, which was the Worldcon in 2004, and was generally a very good egg. It was announced she had died yesterday as we record. None of us knew Deb super well, but she helped out on LunCon a lot, so we all got to know her through that. And she was an absolutely wonderful person, and she will be sorely missed.
Yeah, she was very supportive of many of my kind of vanish and con running endeavours, and this is a great shame.
Who wants to introduce EasterCon?
I joined the EasterCon.
What? Liz joined an EasterCon.
Hurrah!
But last year, this was like a nice and exciting surprise that I'd also booked a plane ticket, but this time I just bought a virtual membership. So
that's fair.
And you're not going to be a stunt Liz.
So philosophical question, can I be a stunt Liz?
You can be anything you want to be, Liz. Don't let imposter syndrome stop you.
It would be quite funny.
Will I be able to see your face at any point during the weekend?
I'll be virtually present at the EasterCon, and you might possibly be able to see my face if I join like a Zoom party or something. But I'm not time shifting, so.
So I've got to get up early to see your face.
Early-ish.
We could Zoom you into breakfast.
You could Zoom me into breakfast, yes.
What, over at the... Do you know if there are any greasy spoons with good breakfasts in Telford? So the thing about this EasterCon is that it's being held in a conference centre with a number of on-site hotels and then a number of other hotels. And I am in one of the other hotels, and I think John and Espana are also in one of the other hotels.
Yep, it's got a pool.
Oh, that's quite nice. And what that means is that I won't just be kind of wandering down to breakfast in the Con Hotel and then at 9:45 for my 10 o'clock thing. I'll have to actually get up and plan. So I was hoping that there are some good cafes in Telford, so if you know of any, do let me know. I know it's like Bloody Thursday when you're listening to this. And it also means that the conference centre shuts at, I believe, 10:30 in the evenings. And after that, there will be a late bar in the Holiday Inn. But you will only be able to buy drinks at the late bar if you are staying in the Holiday Inn or the other...
The International. Is it the International?
The International is the other official Con hotel, and I am not in either of those two hotels on account of how I'm a cheapskate. I'm either going to spend EasterCon super sober or have a sack full of tins with me. One of those.
Or, if you are staying in the Holiday Inn, write in, because we will trade ribbons for beer.
Oh, yeah, no, also, you can buy me a beer in exchange for an Octothorpe ribbon, or indeed a Café Mousse ribbon, because I'll have Café Mousse, only if you're a mooster for the Café Mousse ribbons. But there'll be a Café Mousse meetup at EasterCon as well. We just don't know where and when yet.
This is a spectacular deal, because I bet the beers in the Holiday Inn are not cheap. I think you can feel free to demand some actual cash off my co-hosts. Not that anyone has cash anymore.
Liz, stop ruining our elaborate plan to get cheap beer.
Okay, so one of the things about this is that during lockdown, about 600 of you said to me, oh, I'll buy you a drink when all this is over. And what you don't realise is I was taking names.
There is a statute of limitations on offers of drink when I think it may have expired.
I think it might have done. No, that's fine. Yes, we would like you to go to the bar for us with our credit cards.
Yes.
And make sure that we can drink. But also, the only thing that I recognise as beer in the late bar is Camden IPA. So I might have a bag of tins anyway, just saying.
So, yes. I mean, so having having been someone who has stayed off-site at previous EasterCons, this is... this is not the first time that there have been late night things where you have to find someone who was in the right hotel to get them to buy you a drink. And also there have been times when I've been staying in the right hotel and I've still wanted to find someone who was staying in the right hotel to buy me a drink on account of how I used to be an undergraduate. So thank you very much for Tobes buying me drinks when I was an undergraduate. This is very good. And any rumours that I learned how to forge his signature so I could charge things to the room are entirely unfounded.
Oh, that sounds so plausible. I mean, it may be unfounded, but it's very plausible.
We are not staying in the Holiday Inn, but I will be in the bar, probably. I will also be in the games room. We'll talk about the games room in a minute. And Liz will be in her house.
I will be in my house.
With tins.
Maybe with tins. It's just I'll be... No, wait. I'm going to be very confused as what I'm going to be, because I will be a varying number of hours ahead depending what day and time of day it is, because the clocks go forward, right?
Yes.
Clocks go forward on the Saturday night of EasterCon.
Yeah, so that's going to be confusing. So, I mean, I think this is just a ploy for a fitter, happier, healthier EasterCon, because I also noticed there's a great big park next to the conference centre, which looks very nice, actually. There's a great big park. Everyone's going to go to bed at 10:30. And you're not all going to be having breakfast together in one giant room full of plague. So, yeah, I think everyone's going to come out healthier from this one than from previous EasterCons.
Okay, so based on the last two EasterCons, I hardly see how I could come out less healthy. Oh, no, that's tempting fate, isn't it?
There will be a sweepstake, listeners. Look in the show notes for a link to that. I will not be joining you for breakfast in a cafe, Alison, because I will have a breakfast in my hotel, which has breakfast included. And I'm hoping it will have mushrooms and hash browns. Those are both healthy, right, Liz? Those are vegetables.
Absolutely.
Good. Good, 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 good. I have also been looking to see if there are any interesting breweries around Telford, and I am not seeing many. And I have had this similar look around Shrewsbury when I've been visiting with friends and also been similarly rather disappointed. So if you know of any local beers that I should be trying to obtain while I'm there, please let me know.
So here's what I'm doing at EasterCon, because although the programme has not been released yet, apparently...
We believe by the time this drops, the program will have been published, but we are using a little-known secret method, which is called guessing the URL that the EasterCon program will probably have to see if we can find it before it's out. And we have, listeners, so we're going to discuss it now with a proviso that it might change.
But the program will obviously be out by the time you get this, which is early on Maundy Thursday, because No, it will be. I'm fairly sure. It normally is, isn't it? So here's what I'm doing. I'm on a panel about starting a skill from scratch. The moderator wrote to me and said, tell us which skill you started from scratch. And I'm like, oh, there's so many. Because for people who don't know, I randomly pick a hobby and then do it obsessively for a while and then stop and do a different one. So I have quite a lot of things to say about that. And then I'm on an item at 8 o'clock on Friday called Talking About Tabletop Games. I think possibly with John.
Me. Yes, with me. So this is a panel I suggested, and you can come along to hear why I suggested it and what I think about it, because there is a real danger that if I talk about it here, there will be no point in having the panel.
Fair. There's a fan fund item at 11 o'clock on Saturday called Around the World in 80 Trip Reports, where I will be talking about the fan funds and about trip reports, probably. And then there is a fan funds auction, which you should all come. Bring us stuff, but actually, let us know as soon as possible if you have fabulous things for us to auction, because we're going to have a catalogue, as we have done for the last couple of times. So if you bring us things at late in the weekend and say, can you auction this? We'll be like, oh, we definitely can, but possibly at Glasgow. So, and then on Monday at 1 o'clock, we have Octothorpe Live in what is becoming our standard slot.
Yes, because it means that, you know, we can talk about the EasterCon at the EasterCon. And Liz will be, I believe, in the audience for this.
That is my plan.
Yeah, and we will have a special stunt Liz. So, yes, so I have a schedule, and my schedule is, as Alison mentions, I am on Talking About Tabletop Games at 8 p.m. on Friday. I am on Fan Funds Auction at 8 p.m. on Sunday. And I am on Octothorpe Live at 1 p.m. on Monday. So I'll see some of you there, I'm sure. But I am also on the Friday at 4 o'clock, a panel on Andor, the Star Wars television programme called Spies, Saboteurs, Assassins. And I think that is going to be a good panel. I think it's being moderated by Tommy Ferguson, who is the chair of the next EasterCon, and has some good people on it, and should be a good hoot. I'm also on a panel at 10 a.m. on Saturday called The Threat and Promise of Mega Constellations. I will be on the promise side of the panel argument, and I suspect I will be very lonely.
I don't know what a mega constellation is.
That's why you should go to the panel.
Constellations with lots of satellites in is what a mega constellation is. But I promise to go into that in more detail on the panel.
Oh, so it's not like a lot of stars. I was like, oh, it's going to be a lot of stars.
No.
So this is like space. This is like endlessly orbiting space junk.
Well, that if you take the threat side, yes.
When have I ever done that, John?
My career has largely been based on analysing data from mega constellations, so. And I believe that is being moderated by Jackie Burns, who is the guest of honour, who has also very kindly supplied an art for the newsletter, which I'm running. If you would like to help with the newsletter, please come and help. Alison, I believe, is helping with newsletter.
Yeah, 100%.
And are you volunteering with anything else at EasterCon, Alison, or is it?
It's you and fan funds, I think.
Ah, fair enough. The other thing that is happening at EasterCon is there will be, well,
lots of things happening at EasterCon.
Yes, many other things are happening at EasterCon. One of the things in which I am interested is games. So I will be bringing some games. I will be bringing Atma, a role-playing card game by the people who made Shipwreck Arcana, which Liz introduced me to a while back. What else am I going to be bringing? I will be bringing Back to the Future, the card game. I will be bringing Cthulhu and Pirate Flux. I will be bringing Hanabi. And I will be bringing the Noisy Persons card game. So yes, if you'd like to play some games, do let me know. And I see Tim Kirk is bringing Blood on the Clock Tower. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to play a couple of games of that, because I love Blood on the Clock Tower. So yeah, I'll be good. There is a spreadsheet, which I will link in the show notes, which you can peruse, that has some games on it.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at the list of games I have on Board Game Geek, and if there's any you want to play, tell me, oh, before this podcast comes out. So that won't work, and then I could pack them.
Yes, that's your problem. Please go back in time and tell Alison so that she can pack them last Tuesday.
I will probably be bringing Mindbug First Contact, a game that I only bought because it build a challenge on Board Game Geek. I don't know what I'll be bringing. I might not bring too many games, but I am playing a card game every day in March, and that includes some of the days of the EastCon. So I will have to have some sorts of games. But there's been a couple of... There was one game where it got to 11:30 and I was like, oh, I have not played a card game today. Oh, look, I can play clocks. I can play Clock Patience on the internet. That'll do.
I am mostly bringing small card games because they take up less room in my luggage.
The Guff Race has started now. We have two candidates who are Ian Nichols, who is a Perth fan of very long standing, and Kat Clay, who has won the Ditmar for Best Fan Writer for the last 2 years. So we are delighted to have two excellent candidates, and do please vote. You can vote online, or we might put a link in the show notes. That's probably what we'll do. We'll put the link to voting for Guff in the show notes. You could also vote at EastCon at the FanFuns table. And yes, one of those people will be coming to Glasgow, along with the winners of TAF, and not the winner of EFF, who will be going to ErasmusCon the following weekend instead. And I have made that mistake every single week on the podcast. It's kind of something I do now. I'm just kind of overly Wilcon focused, but I make that mistake every week. So hopefully I will have stopped making that mistake by the time we get to Wilcon, or indeed ErasmusCon in Rotterdam, which I will not be going to.
Voting for the Doc Weir Award will also be happening at the EastCon. So Doc Weir is given to the unsung hero of the EastCon, or of British fandom more generally, I suppose. And last year it was the excellent Claire Brierley of Croydon. This year Claire will be administering the award because the thanks you get for being an unsung hero is being made to do more work behind the scenes, as is the great tradition of Con Running. And so if you would like to vote, I believe there will be an online option. There will also be a paper option. So do exercise your right to vote. And if you're not sure who to vote for, ask around, because there's usually some ideas being passed around at the convention.
And you can also pass ideas around.
Yes, I put the fix in once and it was very good. I felt like a proper smoff.
This is a chance to mention one of the things that EasterCon has done spectacularly well, which is that they have an EasterCon members portal, which you should have had a link to in your email, but you could also just Google it and find it. And that has links to the README, the Discord chat, the souvenir book, and voting in the Doc Weir Award and BSFA Award, and other information about the convention. And I'm hoping it will also have, by Thursday, links to vote in all the FanFuns races as well.
Yes, so as noted, you can go to the member portal and vote in the BSFA Awards. This is the only place you can vote. You cannot vote on paper. And I will note that you have to vote by noon on Saturday, because the winner will be announced at 1 p.m. on Saturday, which I've got to say is a tighter turnaround than I would have been happy with. But I guess you can be checking there's no wackiness going on in the votes as you go along. If you are on a train to EasterCon, you can still go and log in and vote in the BSFA Awards. I mean, it's also ranked choice voting. I hope their spreadsheet is, you know, doing all the elimination for them.
In best non-fiction long, especially, there are some very good things that you should go and vote for. But there are some very good things in all of the categories, and you should cast your vote accordingly.
In further awards news, Software announced the finalists for the Nebula Awards, which will be presented in June. And we also know that the Hugo Award shortlist will come out at EasterCon. And so, we are currently in that 24 hours where we can speculate wildly about the Hugos based on the information for the Nebula Awards. And if you are listening to this any point after Friday evening, it's out of date.
Indeed. So yeah, there's a sweet spot of about 36 hours where this podcast will be scorchingly relevant. And after that, we will know the Hugo finalists and it will be less relevant, but still very interesting.
After Friday evening, you can listen to this and laugh at how completely out of touch we were with the Hugo electorate.
So I would note that the novel list has two books that we mentioned when we were talking about possible novel nominees, which are The Saint of Bright Doors and Translation State.
I think we also mentioned The Terraformers by Annalee Newitt.
Oh, we might have done, actually.
I mentioned it on account of I didn't like it very much, but yeah, sorry.
I mean, I wasn't going to put it like that, but yes. But it has been in the buzz.
Yeah, I think this looks like a solid list, and I would not be surprised if there is significant crossover with the Hugos.
We didn't mention Witch King, which, now that I look at it, will surely be on the ballot, but I don't think any of us had read it.
No.
Well, I'm going to wait for it to be on the ballot and then read it.
There is that, like...
It's from Tor.com, so that's probably a shout.
Yeah, some stuff is such a deadlock for the ballot that I'm like, well, I can just wait until it comes out. Like, I expect that to be on there, and to be honest, I expect John Scalzi's latest to be on the Hugo list, and so I'll wait for them to be in the voter pack.
A lot of the people I hang out with, listeners, are unrepentant hipsters when it comes to what they read, and none of the people that I talk to about science fiction have been talking about Witch King. And so, yes, if I'm very honest, hadn't occurred to me it might be nominated, hadn't thought about it at all. But now it's on the Nebula list. Yes, very obviously, it's probably going to be on the Hugo list. I did want to say one thing about the Nebula list and its potential crossover with the Hugo list, which is particularly in game writing. So the Nebula's award games slightly differently to the Hugo in that the Nebula award is specifically for the writing. But it is curious that Tears for the Kingdom is not on the list. Chance of Sennar and Baldur's Gate 3 are both on the list, as is Dredge, which I think we have previously mentioned.
I did, yeah.
There's also The Bread Must Rise, which I think is a text adventure, because I think Choice of Games is one of the things that was covered in the 50 Years of Text Games project. Alan Wake 2 and the Nine Fox Gambit role-playing game by Yoon Ha Lee and Marie Brennan. But I'm a bit confused by that, because I read role-playing game and assumed that it was a paper RPG, but then it says androids, and I'm like, is it a phone game? And I don't know.
Let's find out.
Live research.
Yeah, it's Android Press, not Android phones.
I thought we'd talked about The Bread Must Rise, and now I feel terrible that we didn't, because we probably should have done. I think the thing about the Nebulas and its award for game writing is that people look at a game like Tears of the Kingdom and don't spot the fact that it's got writing in it, because that writing doesn't end up being words on the page while you're playing. It's the writing is in the design of the scenarios and the puzzles and all of that. And I think that this is a reason why you're not going to see games like that on the Nebulas.
Yeah, I mean, I would word it slightly differently, which is I think Zelda games have wank writing, and therefore it is not surprising to me that Zelda is not on this list. It might be that they've leveled up significantly since all of the other Zelda games, but I've never played a Zelda game and thought, ho-ho, this is good writing.
Okay, fair.
I went and looked up The Bread Must Rise, and it is a 450,000-word interactive comedy fantasy baking eldritch horror novel.
Yes, which sounds like I might have to go and encounter it. Choice of Games is an app I have on my phone ever since the 50 Years of Text Games project concluded, but I have not yet actually played any of the games on it because I don't really know where to begin. So this is a good thing because it gives me a place to begin.
And I got to say, Nine Fox Gambit World sounds like a great place to have like an RPG. You know, pick your faction. You know, decide what your customs are, you know, and there's a lot of space for making a lot of really interesting stuff up there in that world, I think.
Yeah. On that topic, I'm extremely curious about an RPG set in that world, because I think one of my core criticisms is harsh, but I think one of the things I thought about that world was that I wasn't really sure how the internal logic worked in anything approaching a coherent way, and I am fascinated by the idea that it's got an internal logic that can be codified into a role-playing game, and I think I might buy the role-playing game just so I can see how that works. But also, I had not heard of Android Press, and that is partly because they are, I think, mostly known for science fiction and not gaming content. I've visited their itch.io page, and they have published this RPG, and they have also published a GM-less RPG based on the Psalm for the Wild built by Becky Chambers, which you can purchase for a price of your own naming. So yeah, those are their two games. The game they've done based on the Becky Chambers novella is A Hack of Wonder Home, which has been receiving various rave reviews for a while now. It was also a Nebula Award finalist, and it won a few Ennies as well. Ennies are like the Hugos for role-playing games. I might have to keep an eye on them, because they're clearly at the intersection of tabletop gaming and science fiction.
I have just downloaded The Bread Must Rise, and I love it already, because the very first screen is Would you like to play in omnivore mode or vegetarian mode or vegan mode if you don't want animal products in your baking?
Brilliant.
So I like lard in my baking. Ooh. Yeah, well, my pick for next time's sorted, guys.
Liz has put in a link in the show notes since we've started talking entitled Hugo Award Betting Markets. Liz.
Yeah.
Is this a contender for best interactive work?
It's not super interactive. So what it is there's a website called Manifold Markets where I think basically you get some fake currency and you can use it to set up your own, like, betting market on anything you want to bet on. Yeah, so I can't remember how I found it, but I became aware that someone is running betting markets for four of the Hugo fiction categories, novel, novelette, novella, and short story. And so you can look at this and look at how many, you know, votes there are for the different items. And if you use your fake money, you can, like, move stuff up and down. You can say, yes, I think this will be on the ballot, and then probably it'll get a higher percentage. Or you can say, no, I don't think it will. And then, like, the markets adjust. So it's going to be interesting to see how well it has actually predicted the Hugo Award. The top six at time of recording are two that are on the Nebula list, Translation State and Witch King. Also, Some Desperate Glory by Emily Tesh, Starling House by Alex Harrow, The Adventures of Amina al-Sarafi by Shannon Chakraborty, and Start a Villain by John Scalzi. So they're the top six. And then the next ones are The Terraformers and Water Outlaws. Now, of course, I'm discussing this after the Nebula Award ballot came out, but that doesn't actually seem to have boosted The Terraformers and The Water Outlaws. So maybe there is not that much information going in there. But it is quite interesting. I mean,
there's an interesting thing, which is that this is from 11 traders.
Ah, yes. Fair enough.
So does that mean that 11 people have bet?
Yes.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that this is a plausible look at a slice of the voters, but I suspect that basically, because it's got Bookshops and Bone Dust by Travis Baldry down at like 10th. And I think what that says to me is that the people who have voted on this are not Baldry fans, but I wonder whether Baldry fans and the wider electorate, they might not have a perfect microcosm, is what I'm saying. This might not be a representative sample, but it is interesting. And also, we should all bet on it. How do I bet on it?
I send you my affiliate link and you set up an account and then I get some bonus fake books.
Oh, you should also do that to me.
And also, you should put that link in the show notes, Liz.
Yeah, absolutely.
And rake in those fake bucks. We are not sponsored by Manifold, and Liz received no monetary value for plugging Manifold on the pod.
Yeah, but she is putting her affiliate link in the show notes. We now have to have a thing saying, our show notes may contain affiliate links.
That can be the episode title, just to make it very clear.
Yeah, so we should make our prediction for the ballot, shouldn't we?
I don't have any predictions. Is that helpful? Incisive commentary.
Okay, we probably shouldn't make predictions, but I think the top five, the ones on the ballot, are definitely going to include the Martha Wells and the Travis Baldry, and maybe the Scalzi again. Oh, it's depressing.
Doing it based on previous finalists, I would guess it will be the Parker Chan, the Baldry, the Wells, the Harrow, the Leckie, and the Scalzi. That would be my guess based purely on these are names that we know Hugo people will nominate. But there's a slight wrinkle in that the nominating community is Chengdu and Glasgow. So it's like a little bit atypical.
They won't be throwing out the Chinese ballots this time. So that could put a wrinkle on the ballot.
That is true. There's no Chinese names on here.
No, but I think also novel is particularly tricky for anyone who is outside China to work out. Because when I was trying to work out what even were the things that got thrown off the ballot in Chengdu, it's really difficult to work out where they were published or who they were published by, or whether they're actually eligible. So, yeah, I mean, and the things on this list are just the ones that have been input by, you know, the 11 people who are betting on them.
Yes.
But yeah, it will be interesting to see if we do get another mixed ballot. Because everyone who voted in site selection in DC for Chengdu got a supporting membership, which got automatically turned into a full WSFS attending membership of Chengdu. And so they will also all have nominating rights, right?
Yes, that is true. And they obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but they won't have voting rights unless they join Glasgow.
Because one of the things we know is that there are a lot of people at the Chengdu Worldcon who did not have a WSFS membership, but all those people who voted in site selection do still have a full WSFS membership that lets them nominate.
On the subject of the Hugo Awards, Hugo Girl, after the nominations deadline passed, unrecused themselves. So we think this is jolly good because we think recusing is good, but we also think winning Hugo Awards in unasterisked years is good. And I'm just happy that I'll be able to vote for them again in Seattle.
Yes, I think also that the timing of their announcement was very classy. They obviously waited until Glasgow nominations were closed to say, actually, we're going to put ourselves back in the game for Seattle, which I think would have been fair anyway. Like, there's an argument that maybe you should recuse yourself for a year or a couple of years, but not, you don't necessarily have to do it forever anyway. But I think it's totally reasonable that if you have won in a year which now has a big question mark next to it, and you did not you're not really enjoying the glory of being a Hugo winner because you're forever wondering about it, that you get a chance to have an unambiguous win.
Good show.
I will do two quick picks, and they will be quick. So I have a non-genre pick, which is a video game, which is a little bit like a card game, called Balatro, which has been kind of viral if you're in the right place. As in, I first heard about it from reading about it in The Guardian, which, readers, is not how you normally learn about, how I normally learn about video games. And I learnt it the second time from my kids, who were like, oh, mum, you should definitely play Balatro, but you better not plan to do anything else for about 72 hours. And that was right. And it is basically a chap who, working alone, has discovered a way to make video poker a bit more addictive, which is not a thing that it needed, and has written a deck-building roguelike on a poker theme. It's fantastic. It's very, very funny, and it's got lots of things, and it is just a poker game. So, you know, it's exactly the sort of game I like, in that it doesn't have deep writing. It just has that loop that makes you go, oh no, I want to have another run and see if I do better than I did in the last run. There are lots of different ways to build your deck in order to win. There are also lots of ways in which your deck will not win. And it's, despite having a poker theme, there's no gambling involved. You pay once and you get the whole game. Nevertheless, it's been given an 18 rating by game raters, because apparently pretending to be about video poker and thence gambling is bad, but actually having lots of paid for loot boxes is not so bad. I don't quite understand that, but there we go. So Balatro, it's very good. Its only science fictional content is that it has got planets in it and also tarot cards. But that's not really very science fictional, I think. So, but it is good. And it's exactly the sort of game I like, which is that it has that kind of, oh, I just need to keep playing this until I forget to eat and sleep. But then I stopped playing it because of my other pick, which will be out by the time you get this, which is, because it's going to the printers tomorrow, which is the Conversation 2023 souvenir book, which has excellent writing by all of our guests. Well, not writing by all of our guests, about all of our guests and by some of our guests, and then a fascinating and lengthy con report about our convention, and then all the stuff you'd expect to have, like a copy of the programme and accounts for many previous Easter cons. So it has wonderful things in it, and you can either get it as a PDF or, if you asked in time, a paper copy, but you had to ask by last week.
One other thing that I believe the EasterCon souvenir book will have is a review by Neil Harrison, who was the guest of honour at this EasterCon, and this is a review of I, Jedi by Michael A. Stackpole, a Star Wars book about the galaxy's best detective, Jedi, starfighter pilot and lover. And distressingly, it's an incredibly insightful and good review, which is very annoying because you can't win with Neil. He turns out gold no matter what you do. But yes.
It is a startlingly good review in a number of respects. It's very insightful and it's also extremely funny.
Yes. So Andrew Hogg and I bought the review. It came with a free book, but the review was really what we wanted. We're very happy with it. So we're looking forward to other people reading it.
Should I do my pick? Is that what you're waiting for?
I don't know. You can if you like.
John, you're going to be pleased because...
Oh, I like being pleased.
You're not going to be pleased for the reason you think you're going to be pleased. You're going to be pleased because you said at some point that you might try and read all my picks this year.
Yeah.
And I almost picked an entire trilogy of books.
Right.
And then I thought better of it and just picked a YouTube video series.
Hey!
So I've picked a YouTube video series which is called No CGI is Really Just Invisible CGI. And there's three parts out of a planned four parts, but I think the three parts are good enough to watch without the fourth. And it's by a VFX artist who wanted to kind of take something on about a lot of claims you see in the marketing and promotion of films, that this film was done entirely with practical effects and there was no CGI, and that makes it superior. And so he unpicks quite a lot that films going way, way back have not always literally been filming everything that's on screen, and goes back through a lot of stuff about like matte paintings and so on, and that this manipulation has always been there. And then goes through some films which have kind of marketed themselves as no CGI, we really filmed all this, and then shows all the CGI in them. And a really interesting bit in one of them is that he looks at Barbie, a film which he's obviously very positive about and thinks used, you know, VFX in a really interesting way. But also in the making of section, they basically crudely removed all the blue screen to make it look like things weren't filmed on a blue screen background, which is hilarious. And you can see how badly they did it in some places, because he's like, look, you can see the blue screen through this person's hair. So they're so desperate for people to think that they didn't film it on a blue screen that they actually now try and remove it from all the kind of extraneous material. So I think it's really interesting, and it's making a very convincing kind of case for why, you know, no CGI should not be a marketing claim. But also he's got access. He's obviously read a lot of interviews, listened to a lot of interviews in like cinematography magazines and so on, and also has loads and loads of examples from these like VFX reels that the different studios do to show you exactly where the VFX is. And a lot of the time, one, either it looks like magic to me, or it's like they VFX something that I would never have considered you would do by kind of CGI. So yeah, it's interesting. It'll take you about an hour to watch.
So it does sound very interesting. It sounds very much up my street. But if you are interested in this, the VFX artist Todd Vaziri is on Mastodon, I believe Blue Sky, and on X. And he is a VFX artist who's been working in the field for a very long time. His first movie was, I believe, the first Michael Bay Transformers. But he worked on like Iron Man 2, Rogue One, Avatar. He works at ILM. And he does this as well, Liz. He basically specializes in retweeting tweets from studios where they've said, we shot everything practically, and being like, nope, I worked on the VFX effect that's in this screenshot. And it is great. Like, so if you like this sort of thing, it is very, very good. But yes, no. So I'm fascinated to watch this, because this is really in my wheelhouse, because I think it's just absolutely fascinating. This is a great pick.
The history of cinema and the history of theatre. The history of theatre is all about doing things on stage that people don't believe. You know, we've been doing this for hundreds and hundreds of years, thousands of years maybe. In fact, no, 10,000 years. I'm going to say 10,000 years because I went to the Ice Age exhibition at the British Museum. I've probably mentioned this before. And they had tools that we think that Ice Age peoples used in order to create, to put in front of fires so that it would cast shadows on walls, so that they could tell theatrical stories using VFX effects in 8000 BCE. They can do that.
I'm going to talk about something that isn't genre, which is I played a card game at a convention, and it was called Overs, and it's a card game about cricket. It's basically complicated rock, paper, scissors, but in the gloriousest possible way. I'm just really enthusiastic about it. I won't have a copy of it before this EasterCon, but I will be bringing it to a future EasterCon probably. It was really good. It really captured the kind of the trying to outthink your opponent of, like, you know, trying to bowl the right ball based on what shot you think the batter's going to play and vice versa. And it was really, really neat. But I did that at the convention AirCon, which is a Harrogate board gaming convention, which occurs in March every year. And I went down to Yorkshire with a couple of pals for the day, and we went to AirCon. It was in the Harrogate Convention Centre, which is opposite the Majestic, where the 2018 EastCon was. It was a really good convention, but it was a bit new for me because it's the first time in a long time that I've been to a convention kind of almost on my own, where I didn't really know anyone. And it was kind of an interesting, because like, that isn't a common experience for me. And so I think on a future episode, we might talk a little bit about that, listeners, foreshadowing. But it was good. I enjoyed it. I also played a great game of Blood of the Clock Tower where I managed to convince everyone I was the mayor, but I was actually the imp, and then we won, and I made a lot of enemies that day. It's good.
Yeah, we now have a balaclava of evil for situations like this that happen in our house, which we have liberated from the game it was once attached to.
When I decluttered my copy of War on Terror, the evil balaclava was the one thing I was like, oh, but I could keep it because then I'd have the evil balaclava. But does one really need an evil balaclava? Yes, I regret getting rid of that game every day.
Yeah, I kept the cones too because I make print and play games and cones are very useful for print and play games.
And also, to quote a pop culture phenomenon, it's about the cones.
Cones of Dunshire?
Cones of Dunshire. Every so often, I will be playing a game and I will realise that I have gone off base on what it is I'm supposed to be doing and I've got distracted by some neat mechanic that won't help me win. And then I just mutter to myself, it's about the cones.
This is John's poker tell, if you're ever playing poker against John.
That was the Octothought podcast, and it's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Coming on the train, aren't you?
No.
No, you're not coming on the train.
No. I'm going to come with Neil and Nick, and there's a very real worry that they'll want to listen to Octothorpe. So if we're listening to this in the car, hi, Neil and Nick. I hope it's not awkward.
Oh, that's quite funny, though, isn't it?
I have previously put my headphones in and listened to another podcast because I'm in a car where people are listening to Octothorpe.
Was that also Neil and Nick?
No, I think it was Ian, actually. I don't want to listen to my own voice for any more time than absolutely necessary.
When I'm doing the listen for editing, I often, if there's people around, I'm still kind of like, oh no, I'm going to do this with headphones on, so you can't hear.
The theme music for this episode was Fanfare for Space by Kevin MacLeod and Compitech.com, used under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license.
This podcast will self-destruct at the beep.
Beep.